Aloha and welcome, friends. We're so glad you're here tonight. You are in for a very, very special treat. If you have not had a chance to hear Sam Rotman before, this, we believe, is now our fourth or fifth time, Sam, together, fourth time together here in Kihei Baptist. And we're so excited to welcome back our friend Sam Rotman. We're going to pray, and then we'll get started. Sam will come up and play, share with you a little bit. And again, we just want to thank you all for coming. And Father, we thank you for this privilege tonight to hear from Sam and to acknowledge the gifts that you've given him. May we each one enjoy this time together. In Jesus' name, amen. Brother Sam, come on up, my friend.
Welcome.
Well, thank you for coming out tonight. And so this concert is a little special because I was supposed to be here a year ago, almost this day. And I had these 12 concerts in the island, and COVID hit, and it's done. And so we decided, well, let's just move it a year later. So last year was 2020, September. And 2020 is the 250th anniversary of the birth of Beethoven. Oh, by the way, it's very important that everybody has a program. Who does not have a program? If you do not have a program, everybody has to have a program. It's very important. So raise your hand high. Raise your hand. There's five or six over here. Everybody have a program? If you're coming in, be sure and get a program. Thank you very much. And maybe you can make sure if people come in a little late that they get a program in the back. You can hand it to them. Okay, well, let's start again. So last year was the 2020. It was the 250th anniversary of the birth of Beethoven. And from March 15th to October 15th, I had about 64 concerts all postponed, including coming to Maui. And so I thought, well, what do I do now? And I thought, well, Beethoven is still 250. He turns 251 on December 16th. So he's not 251 yet. Thank the Lord he wasn't born January 8th. Then we're really messed up because he's already 251. And on December 16th, which is his 251st birthday, and December 15th, the last day of his 250th birthday, I'm playing two concerts in Bonn, Germany, a half a mile from the house he was born in. He was born in Bonn, Germany, and it's a very famous birth house of Beethoven. I've been there, and I'm doing two concerts there, which was supposed to be last year, but postponed to this year. I have my flights. Hopefully, we'll see if it turns out. So this is concert, if you look at your program, is celebrating the 250th anniversary of the birth of Beethoven. And so I'm going to play you a lot of pieces by Beethoven. You'll learn about him and things that are very unique about him. And then, of course, I'm going to share that music's not the most important thing in my life, but my journey of faith, and that's going to come much later into the program. The program, by the way, is about an hour and a half, so you know how long we're here. And again, introducing the pieces and, again, Beethoven. So let's start right away. Look at your program. The first piece on the program is the first piece Beethoven ever wrote for the piano. Now, that's interesting. He's 25 years old. He's a great pianist. He's done concerts of Mozart and Bach, and of course, he's a composer, and now this is his first piece. It's in four parts, if you look at it. The first part is lively. The second part is slow. To me, the most profound part is the second part. The third part is a little dance, and the fourth part is very fast. What is unbelievable about this piece is that when Beethoven played this piece in December of 1795, in one night, the course of music changed forever. Because nobody envisioned music this dramatic or intense, the power of the music that it could have upon a listener. To many people, music was entertainment. It was background music. Leopold II would hire Mozart to write background music while they had tea. So Mozart wrote background music. Haydn wrote background music. They wrote serious music that was not that. But Beethoven said, my music is not background music. It is the power of the human soul. And in that one concert, music really changed, and Beethoven made it happen because of this intensity and this drama. So notice who it's dedicated to. It's dedicated to a man named Franz Joseph Haydn. Haydn was a very important composer. He was 38 years older than Beethoven. He taught Beethoven for a while. He also was a mentor to Mozart. And so he acknowledges Haydn in saying, you know, thank you for your teaching and your guidance to me. And so I show my appreciation to you by dedicating this first piece for the piano to you, Franz Joseph Haydn. He was known as Papa Haydn, actually, because of his seniority. So this is the first piece for the piano in four parts by Beethoven. Thank you. So 18 months after Beethoven played this piece, something happened to Beethoven that would change his life forever. And that is, he began to go deaf. He began to have ringing in his right ear and then ringing in his left ear. He went to see some doctors and they gave him horns to try to funnel the sound in. And then the ringing began to go away and he thought, oh good, I'm being cured. But the ringing was going away because his hearing was going away. And for the next 5 1/4 years, Beethoven began this long descent into becoming totally deaf. 80% of his music was written while he was going deaf, and the vast majority of that he wrote, he was totally deaf. So people have asked me for 50 years, how does a man write music if he can't hear it? So Beethoven, of course, learned and knew that you don't need to hear music with your ears to hear music in your head. So I'm going to sing for you the Star Spangled Banner. Oh, Jose can. Do you hear the Star Spangled Banner? You sure do. You hear it in your head. Which shows that you don't need to hear music to hear music with your ears. You can hear it. Right now, all of us, let's hear Amazing Grace right now. I hear Amazing Grace. So this is the big difference between Beethoven, who's a cosmic genius, and Sam Rotman, who's a speck of dust with air pumped in me. You know the Star Spangled Banner, and I know the Star Spangled Banner, because you've heard the Star Spangled Banner. Beethoven heard music that nobody ever heard. And I have a book called Beethoven in His Own Words, from diaries he kept and letters that he wrote back to, where a man asked him, where do you get the musical ideas? And he said, the music that's in my mind has been given to me by the Almighty. And I am just putting it down on paper for him. Now you got to understand, that's an amazingly humble statement. God gives me the music and I'm taking ink and putting it down on white paper for him. Now, the reason I share all of this is because the next piece that Beethoven wrote, he wrote while he was going deaf, actually near the end of his deafness, end of his process of going deaf. And it's called the Pathetique. Look at it with me for a minute. The first piece I played was Sonata Number 1. This is now Sonata Number 8. And pathos, Pathetique comes from the word pathos, which means suffering. Suffering. It doesn't mean emotions. It literally means suffering. This is where we get the passion of the Christ. It comes, the pathos de Christus. The suffering of Christ is the passion of Christ, is the pathos of the Christ. And Beethoven was going through a lot of suffering. This was a very, very difficult time, tumultuous time. In the first 15 seconds, you'll hear these chords, and it's absolutely suffering. In German, it's called Angst. Angst is just absolute pain. The piece gets very fast, very agitated. And when you see my right hand going over my left hand, most of you will be able to see that, this is Beethoven talking to himself. This is a dialogue that Beethoven has, talking, answering questions, wondering. The second movement is a prayer. I have friends of mine who think it's the most beautiful piece Beethoven ever wrote. And it's an absolute amazing piece. It's almost a sense of peace, resignation, acceptance, after all this turmoil and suffering. I try to play the piece almost without breathing because it's so pure emotionally. The third movement, again, is very fast, very intense. And at the end of the piece, Beethoven hits the piano with his fist. Now, it's not literally his fist, but he punctuates these chords where he's literally trying to hear something from the keyboard and he can't hear anything. So this is a very famous piece. Notice who it's dedicated to on the program. It's dedicated to a man named Prince Karl von Lichnowsky. Who is this man? This man was a prince. He was a Polish man who had a palace in Vienna, and he loved music. And every Friday, he put on a program of concerts for the public. And if you were anybody, you were on this program. And if you were anybody in Vienna, you came to this program. And every Friday he had Beethoven perform. And he opened up the world of Beethoven's music to the Austrian people, Viennese people, Austria, and greater Europe. When Beethoven died at the age of 56, 1827, he was purported to be the most famous man in all of Europe. That's how famous he was. And 20,000 people came to his funeral. 20,000 people came to Beethoven's funeral. So he thanks this Carl von Lichnowsky that he opened up the world of an audience to his music. It's one thing to write a music. It's another thing to get an audience to hear the music. And this is what he did. So this is the famous Pathetique Sonata by Beethoven. So the next piece on your program is Sonata number 26. We've gone from 8 to 26. He ended up writing 32 of these sonatas, 855 pages of piano music. So this is many decades later. By the way, after this piece, I'll share my story, and the last piece is only 5 minutes long, so it's very, very short. The secret of this piece is actually who it's dedicated to. That's why I have these dedications in the program. This is dedicated to a man named the Archduke Rudolf Reiner. This man was the youngest son of Leopold II, who was the Emperor of Austria. So this would be like Prince Charles to Queen Elizabeth, the son of the Queen. He was the son, the youngest son of the Emperor. And he loved music, and he saw that Beethoven was going to be Beethoven. And this is what he said to Beethoven. Beethoven, you write music, and I'll pay all your bills. Don't teach. Don't go to university. Beethoven was German. He came to Vienna because that was sort of the hub of classical music with Mozart and Schubert and mostly Haydn. And he was invited, Beethoven was invited to be the music director of a big city in Germany. And he said, don't go. You write music. And 14 of the greatest pieces that Beethoven ever wrote are dedicated to this man. The greatest piece for string quartet, the greatest piece for piano, the greatest piece for piano concerto, the greatest piece for choir are all dedicated to this one individual. Now, you may say, well, of course he loved, Beethoven loved him. He paid all his bills, not for 10 years. Beethoven became very famous, very well off, that he told the Archduke, I don't need your help anymore financially. I need your help as a friend. And this man stuck closer to Beethoven like a brother through many, many turmoils with his deafness and his paranoia of what people were thinking and his insecurity. This man really helped Beethoven tremendously. So in May of 1809, Napoleon, you know who Napoleon is? He is the Emperor of France. He invades Austria. And the Archduke, or excuse me, Leopold II, decides to move his family and his government out of Vienna. And Beethoven writes this piece called, look at your program, the Farewell Sonata. Lebewohl. The Farewell Sonata. He pleads with this friend, please don't leave. Please don't leave. Please don't leave. Now, there's two ways to say goodbye in German. I speak German fluently. One word is Auf Wiedersehen. 99% of the time you say Auf Wiedersehen. And that literally means, after again, I'll see you. Auf Wieder, again, sehen, see, after again, I'll see you. Lebewohl is the word you use when you never expect to see the person again. A final goodbye. In fact, very common in German, you say your Lebewohl to a family member on their deathbed. Your final goodbye. And Beethoven was convinced this was the final goodbye. He would never see this friend again. And over the first three notes of the piece, you'll hear these first three notes very slowly. Beethoven does something he never did in any other piece in music. He writes the words Lebewohl over the first three notes. You don't say it, it's just a motive of this farewell. And throughout the piece, you'll hear these three notes, sometimes in the right hand, answered in the left hand. The right hand, answered in the left hand. It's this farewell, goodbye. And Beethoven is yelling at this guy, and he's yelling back. And they're arguing, and they're chattering. And my right hand is Beethoven, my left hand is the Archduke. And at the end of the first part, my right hand goes to the top of the piano, my left hand goes to the bottom of the piano, and Beethoven writes visually the separation of the two people. Now, this is what's amazing. Beethoven never had an 88-key piano. He had a 72-key piano. And Beethoven actually writes to the very 72 keys from each other to the end of the piano, that nobody wrote for yet, and Beethoven did, to separate the hands, to show the separation of their friendship, of leaving each other. The second movement, if you look at it, it's called The Absence. This was written while the man was gone, and at two places in the piece, Beethoven only has the right hand playing. This is Beethoven all by himself, all by himself. And then on January 30th, 1810, 9 months later, the Archduke returned to Vienna. And boy, you'll hear it. It is a burst of 2,000 notes in 20 seconds. I mean, it is intense joy. They run to each other. They hug each other. And then you have this amazing return. And it's told that Beethoven, after he greeted the Archduke, he came home and in one sitting, without getting up from the piano, he wrote this last movement without a break. Now, let me share one thing personally about the piece. My father was born in Eastern Europe, in Romania. My mother was born in Eastern Europe, in Czechoslovakia. And my parents came to the U.S. in 1950, and they had a lot of friends, Jewish friends, who were also from Romania and Slovakia and Hungary and Russia. And I remember my parents as a little boy taking walks in the mall, and they would have a couple, in other words, a husband and wife, friends. And my father would always be walking with the other male friend, and they would always have their arms locked together. They wouldn't hold hands, of course. They were locked arms. That was very Eastern European. And my mother would be walking with her husband, the wife of the man, the husband of the with my father, and they would be locked arms. And you could see them walking. And two places in this last part, you can literally see Beethoven and the Archduke locked arms together, walking together, with almost like they're on twinkle toes. It's amazing. So this is the Sonata number 26. After this, I'll share my story, and then a short final piece. The sonata, The Farewell Lebewohl by Beethoven. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, you've been great. You've heard a lot of music, 40,000 notes. So I'd like to share with you my story and then play a final short piece. My story really begins with my parents. My father, as I mentioned, was born in Romania in 1905. My mother was born, at that time the country was called Czechoslovakia, and she was born there in 1915. So my parents were 10 years difference in age. And they were both very religious Orthodox Jews. The Orthodox Jews are the strictest adherers to Judaism, to the Jewish faith. They really want to follow the Torah, the five books of Moses, the laws that God gave to the Jewish people through Moses. And my parents left Europe in 1940 because of one person, Adolf Hitler, and the Nazis and the Germans. If my parents stayed in Europe, they both would have been murdered. Absolutely no doubt. My father was 35. My mother was 25. They would have been sent to a concentration camp and immediately killed and exterminated. Or they would have been sent to a labor camp because of their age. And once you got sick at a labor camp, they just shot you because there was no time for you to get better. Everybody that did not leave their town, that stayed, was exterminated. 11 months after my parents left Europe, 1940, my father, the Nazis came to his town. They gathered 10,000 Jews and systematically murdered all 10,000 Jews. Two of them were my grandparents, my father's parents. He had a sister that was taken to a concentration camp and never heard from again. So my parents, Jews, had to get out of Europe. And at that time, there were a few countries in South America that had an open immigration for Jews. And one of them was a small country called Ecuador, right on the equator. And so from 1940 to 1950, my parents lived in Quito, Ecuador, the capital. My brother was born there. My sister was born there. In the spring of 1950, my mother was pregnant with me, and my father wanted to bring his family to the United States. He filled out all the paperwork. He got permission, and they came through New York City, and I was born 5 months after they came to the United States in October of 1950. And I was raised in a very, very religious Jewish home. I can't emphasize how important this was. My grandparents died for being Jewish. My parents suffered for being Jewish. And I was going to identify with everything with my Jewish heritage. My parents sent me to public school during the day. And then I went to school in the synagogue. And it was called Hebrew school. There are Catholic schools and Protestant Baptist schools. There are some, not many, Jewish schools. Hebrew school. Because you read the Old Testament, it's in Hebrew. You go to Israel, you speak Hebrew. So I learned Hebrew going to Hebrew school. I learned all about being Jewish. I learned hundreds of prayers. And I went to Hebrew school 5 days a week for 8 years. So this was a very, very big, important part of my life. I don't say this to be funny. It was not a two-week course. 5 days a week for 8 years. I started when I was 8 until I was 16. All those years of growing up had a big impact on me. All my friends were Jewish. All my relatives were Jewish. I remember I'd wake up in the morning, pray for a half an hour in Hebrew. Then I went to school, and something unusual happened. It sounds funny now, but it was not funny at the time. But as I was growing older, 10, 11, 12 years old, I began to develop a very foul mouth. I could curse very easily. I could lie to my teachers very easily. I could lie to my parents. So I was very religious in the synagogue, and these prayers meant a lot to me. And I realized it was easy to be religious. And then an hour later, I'm swearing and cursing and lying, and that was easy. It was easy for me to be religious when I had to, and it was easy for me to be a sinner when I wanted to. Sadly, I was good at both. Sadly. When I was 17, I was accepted to the famous music school in New York City, the Juilliard School. I was there for 5 years and got a bachelor's and a master's in piano. And there I met three students who called themselves born-again Christians. Well, I had no idea what that meant. But there was something about these students. I saw one of them in a cafeteria having lunch, a sandwich. Another one I would see taking a break from practicing. I'd spot them here and there. And every time I saw them, they were always reading the Bible. The Bible. I mean, this was not a school of religion. This was a school of music. And these were three highly respected, talented students at Juilliard. And when they got together, all they did was talk about Jesus. Jesus did this, and Jesus said this, and what did Jesus mean when he did this, and what did Jesus try to show us when he said what? They never mentioned church. I had no idea about what church they were at. They never mentioned the C word, Christianity. It was always Jesus and Jesus and Jesus and Jesus and Jesus. Well, they heard I was a religious Jew. They asked me two questions. They asked me if I ever read the New Testament. And I told them, nope, not a word. I was told it was not a Jewish book. You would never find a New Testament in our home. I had no idea what was in it. Never saw one, never read one, never touched one. Zero knowledge, nothing. They asked me if I thought of Jesus was the Messiah. You know, the Jews are waiting for the Messiah. In Hebrew, it's called Mashiach. And I said, no, Jesus is not the salvation for Jewish people. But you know, I was very moral. I didn't want to do anything to hurt my parents. My parents almost died for me. They sacrificed for me. So I didn't want to shame them. So I never drank alcohol. To this day, still don't know what a beer tastes like. Never was drunk. Never took drugs. I lived in New York City from 1968 to 1973. That was the height of the Vietnam War. That was the height of the hippie movement. Remember the hippies? And I lived at what's known as Uptown Manhattan, 71st Street and Broadway. And it's not what drugs you wanted, it's how much drugs you wanted. Never took anything. Never. Never had premarital sex. So even though I was so moral on the outside, no sex, no drugs, no drinking, my friend, I'm going to tell you, I was very, very, very immoral. Immoral. You know where? Right here. I knew that I was not on the inside the way I could appear on the outside. I could do many, many Jewish things, but it never affected me on the inside. I was very moral, I was very religious, but not changed. The same foul mouth, dirty-minded, self-centered, egotistical person at 20, at 18, at 16, at 14. Nothing changed about me except I was getting older. So I made a big decision. I said, well, if I want to know about this person, Jesus Christ, I'm going to read this book, the New Testament. And that was a big step for a Jew, to read a New Testament. And I didn't want to talk to a rabbi or a priest or a minister. No one's going to tell me what I'm reading. I'm going to read this book myself. When I was a student at Juilliard, I used to practice for 10 hours a day. Now, let me tell you, that is not a lie, and that's not an exaggeration. I did not sit at the piano for 9 hours and 45 minutes. I sat every day at the piano for 10 full hours. I never left Juilliard until I completely finished practicing 10 full hours a day. I started to read the New Testament, and my whole life came to a stop. For the first time in my life since I started piano as a 9-year-old boy, I stopped practicing. They had given me a little pocket New Testament. You can just put it in your pocket. And they said, well, if you read this book, start in this book called The Gospel of John. So there I look. Oh, there it is, this Gospel of John. So I start reading this book, and here is a man, Jesus, who said of himself, I am the light of the world. Wow, are you kidding me? You know, when a Jew reads that, you know what he thinks about immediately? Someone else talked about light. In Genesis 1, God said, let there be light. And Jesus said, I'm the light. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Jesus said of himself, no person comes to God the Father except through me. Jesus said, he that has the Son of God has life, and he that does not have the Son of God does not have life. And I am the vine, and you are the branches, and without me you can do nothing. No, without God I can do nothing. No. The same love, the same devotion, the same service, the same intensity you give to Almighty God, you give to me. You believe in God, you believe in me. Well, we're in a wonderful church. Let me tell you what I said to myself. Pardon me if you can. I said, this man is beyond the pale. this man's an idiot. This man's a lunatic. Listen. Moses never said words like this. You know who Moses is to the Jews? He never said he was the light of the world. Abraham, the father of the Jews, he never said he was the light of the world. Who was this man to make these statements about who he was? This is impossible. This is an egomaniac. And at that moment, I was going to throw away the New Testament and I was going to go practice. And then I said to myself at that second, Sam, if this person, Jesus, is who he says he is, let me repeat that again. If this person, Jesus, is who he says he is, Sam, Jesus, who are you? You want to know who I am, Sam? I am the light of the world. You know, I may be making the biggest mistake of my life throwing this book away. I better listen to him. And then Jesus said he came for sinners. I was not a sinner. I was very moral. I was very religious. I spent my whole life looking good for God. I was on God's side. But Jesus said he came to bring forgiveness, and he said he came to change us on the inside. He called it a new heart, a new birth, a new life. A spiritual heart, a spiritual birth, a spiritual life. Now, I've played concerts in 61 different countries. You name a country, I've probably been there. Probably 15, 16 countries in Asia, Africa, all through there. I've been in almost every country in Europe, north, south, east, west. South America. I've been to Cuba twice. I went to Cuba twice when you couldn't go to Cuba. And let me tell you what I've learned. 61 different countries. My friend, there is not a shred of difference between a person's color of their skin and anyone else's skin. There is no difference between a Christian and a Hindu and a Muslim and a Buddhist. There is no difference between a Democrat or Republican or Independent or Labor Party or Communist Party. It doesn't matter what language you speak out of 6,000 dialects. It doesn't matter what culture you're from, because I'm telling you this truth. Every person in this world, 7.5 billion people, and every person in this room, we are experts at hiding things. Hiding things. We have made lying with this little instrument into an art. You can hide things from your husband. You can hide things from your wife. You can hide things from your friends. You can hide things from a church. You can hide things from your boss at work. You can hide things from your kids. Your kids can hide things from you. But let me tell you, my friend, nobody hides anything from Jesus Christ. Nobody. Nobody. In fact, Jesus said that every word you say is going to give an answer for. And what you said in the secret, shh, is going to be shouted from the housetops. And even though I was so moral and I was so religious, listen to me carefully, I thought I was clever enough with my tongue and I was crafty enough with my mind that I thought I could hide things from people and God. Nobody could do it like Sam Rotman. Jesus is calling somebody. That's all right. I'll wait. Are you okay down there? Good. I thought I was crafty enough with my tongue and clever enough with my mind that I thought I could hide things from people and God. And on May 21st, 1971, 50 years ago, May of 1971, for the first time I prayed to Jesus Christ. And I'm going to tell you what I told him. My name is Sam Rotman, and Jesus, I want you to take over my life. It's very simple. I want you to tell me what to do, and I will not tell you what to do. I told Jesus the lies I said. I told Jesus the dirty thoughts I had. I told Jesus the immoral words and curse words I said. I decided two things, literally. I'm not going to hide anything from Jesus. You know something? You don't need to hide anything from Jesus, because you're not hiding anything from Jesus. And I decided I'm not going to make up any excuses. Do you realize that you can come to Jesus Christ and you don't need to give him an excuse for anything you've ever done in your life? In fact, if you give him an excuse, you're complicating it. You're mucking it up. We make it complicated. It's not complicated. It was a long prayer. I finished praying. I opened up my eyes, and in a billionth of a second, immediately I knew that Jesus Christ completely, completely, completely transform me on the inside. I had a dirty, filthy mouth, and instantly he cleaned it and changed it. I was shocked I stopped cursing. I was shocked. And I remember a few minutes later, I couldn't form a curse word with my lips, even if I wanted to. I had a dirty, filthy mind, and he cleaned it and changed it. And the first thing I did, I woke up the next morning, I prayed to Jesus Christ, I read more about Jesus Christ, and I couldn't wait to get to Juilliard, and I told every Jewish friend I knew at Juilliard that I met the Messiah. And his name is the Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach. I've played over 3,100 concerts. That's a lot of concerts. And I can tell you, my friend, that all of my concerts are nothing. Nothing. You know how much nothing is? Nothing compared to having Jesus Christ. The greatest thing I ever did in my life, the most important thing I ever did in my life, was to give my life to Jesus Christ. Music's not the most important thing in my life. Jesus Christ is, because listen, my friend, only Jesus Christ can transform your life, period. Your wife can't change you. Your husband can't change you. Your friends can't change you. The church can't change you. The government can't change you. Your children can't change you. Your parents can't change you. Let me tell you something. You cannot change you. You know who the hardest person to live with is? Yourself. But this is the miracle. If you haven't heard anything else, listen to this. This is the miracle in this world. Being cured from cancer is like a miracle. But the miracle in this world is that Jesus Christ actually transforms the human heart. That is a miracle. That is absolutely mind-boggling. He's done it for tens and hundreds of millions and millions of people, and I'm one of them. You know what? No, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right. You want to know why I was Jewish? I was born Jewish. That's the only reason I was Jewish. You know why I was, if I was born in Egypt, I'd be a Muslim. If I was born in India, I've done concerts in India, I'd be a Hindu. Thailand, I've done concerts, a Buddhist. 99% of the world are born into a religion. It's not a religion. It's a person. A person. The central person of human history. You write 2021, you're acknowledging Jesus Christ as the central person of human history. He is this gift to the whole world. Can I tell you something on the side? You know what's the first thing you see when you walk into a synagogue? Any synagogue, Orthodox, Conservative, Reformed, every synagogue has the same thing in their sanctuary, the Ten Commandments, the law of God. You know what's the first thing you see when you walk into a church? You know what it's called? Forgiveness. That's forgiveness, my friend. The first thing in a synagogue is God's law. The first thing in the church, and there's a lot of forgiveness up there because you and I need a lot of forgiveness right here. Salvation is not what you will ever do for Jesus Christ. Salvation is everything that Jesus Christ has done for you. Nothing in my hands I bring, simply to the cross I cling. And I play the piano for Jesus Christ. He gave me the ears to hear the music, fingers to play the music, mind to learn the music, heart to love the music. Jesus has never missed one of my concerts. Two people have never missed my concerts, Jesus and me. And every time I give a concert in a church, college, university, with an orchestra, hall in Europe, there's always one person in the front row. It's Jesus Christ. And every time I sit down to play, he says, Sam, I'm really looking forward to hearing you play for me this evening. My friend, if I could look into your eyes, some of you have masks, most of you don't, so I can still see all your eyes, right? I would tell you with every fiber of my being, my friend, it is worth living for Jesus Christ. Listen. He's not a phantom. He's not a joke. He's not a curse word. He's not hocus pocus. He's not even a nice Christmas story. He is the life and the light of the world. Don't let anything become an excuse to keep you from the amazing life there is in Jesus Christ. For thousands of years, my whole family was Orthodox Jews. I had a million excuses. A million excuses. Your past can disappoint you. Christians can disappoint you. Things can disappoint. They're not worth it. This Jesus is worth it. And you can say like I did. Tell him your name. My name is Jesus. I want you to take over my life. And he will. And I want you to forgive me. And he will. And I want you to be with me, and he will. And I want you to guide me, and he will. And you do that, my friend, you'll experience the salvation of your soul. Music gives me a lot of happiness, but not one note of music will ever change me. I'll play about 40,000 notes tonight on this, all this Beethoven. Not one note is going to change me. Jesus Christ changed me, transformed me, gave me a new life. And my friend, it is worth living, living, living for him. The last piece will be done in 5 minutes. Look at your program. This is a piece you've all heard. It's very, very famous, very popular. It's called the Turkish March. You've all heard this piece. This is the original, by the way. Beethoven, this is the where it all came from. In his 20s, Beethoven heard some street musicians playing this piece, and he liked this little march. He just heard this march, and he wrote it down in his book. And 20 years later, he wrote this piece. You'll hear this march. You'll hear these six little variations, and then at the end, the march again. Now, what is interesting, again, is who it's dedicated to. Look at your program. Please, look at your program. This piece is dedicated to Franz Oliva. You know who Franz Oliva was? He was Beethoven's accountant. He was his tax man. He served Beethoven for over 20 years. And he said, Beethoven did, Franz, you've been a faithful friend to me and helped me through many problems. And I'm going to dedicate this little happy piece to you, this Turkish march. I'm going to dedicate it to you, my accountant. So about a year ago, I realized that Beethoven dedicated pieces to counts and countesses. For instance, you know the famous Moonlight Sonata? That's dedicated to a woman called Countess Juliet Guicciardi. So he dedicated pieces to counts and countesses and even his accountant. I thought, isn't that clever? I was very proud of myself when I came up with that. Countesses and my accountant. So this is the last piece, very short, the Turkish March by Beethoven. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Please be seated. Please be seated just for a minute before the pastor comes up. Does anyone have a question like to ask me about my life, my music, my social security number? Or anybody have a question? Sometimes an intimate group like this, anybody have a question? Yes, sir. When did they bring in the extra keys that Beethoven had? Yes, at the end, they just got higher and lower. Yes, it just were able to make pianos that had higher metal strings and a stronger metal case that they could make it with to take the force of that. So then they just went out and began to go higher and lower. It was 56 keys, this much, and then they went out to 72 keys, and then they went to 88 keys. Yes, ma'am. I get asked that often. So how did my family respond? I knew it'd be very difficult, especially my father. My father's father died because he was Jewish, and now his son believes in this Jesus. So my father asked me to leave the house, and he said three things. You're not my son. I never want to hear from you again. And as far as I'm concerned, you're dead. I knew it'd be difficult. I didn't hear from them for a number of years. I got married to my Christian wife 48 years ago. They did not come to the wedding. We have three children. We wanted to visit them often for them to enjoy the grandchildren and things. It was too difficult for my father. They saw my children maybe three or four times in 25 years. In 1995, my father was 89, almost 90. He was born in 1905. He became ill. I wanted to visit him in the hospital, and he refused to see me. He died 4 days later, and at his request, I did not go to the funeral. I live in the Phoenix area in Arizona. My mother lived in Scottsdale, Arizona, a very big Jewish community in Scottsdale. And my mother, two things about my mother. My mother loved classical music. I'm in classical music because of my mother. You should always listen to your mother. And my mother's whole family escaped the Holocaust. My father lost his family. My mother, miraculously, all of her sisters and family got out. My mother wanted to reach out to me, but it was too difficult for my father. After the passing of my father, I had a tremendous relationship with my mother. I played concerts for her every 6 months. She loved my wife, loved our three kids. I shared with her. She was very religious. I talked to her about what the rabbi spoke about in synagogue. And then I began to read to her the New Testament. I didn't tell her at first it was the New Testament. But I began to read more in the New Testament and then about Yeshua, Jesus. And on February the 12th, 2007, my 91-year-old mother came to faith in Jesus Christ, the Messiah. 91 years. I prayed 37 years for my mother. And it is worth living for Jesus Christ. So I knew it would be very, very difficult for my father. But it brought salvation after many, many years to my mother. So I thank God for that. You have no words to tell what I have for thanks. Yeah. Someone else, any question? Yes, ma'am. Well, my two daughters play the piano, and my son plays the radio very well. No, they all love music. They do. But one's an accountant, one's a lawyer, one's in microfinance. But they pursued other things. But they all love music. My daughter lives in Houston, one lives in Washington. Sometimes they send me the schedule for the symphony orchestra. They say, okay, Dad, what concert should I go to or something? But my two daughters play the piano, and my daughter, who's the lawyer, an intense lawyer, she relaxes by playing the piano at night. So it's therapy for her in that sense. So, but no, that's all right. You know, they love music, and they love my concerts and things like that. So, yeah. Anyone else? Anyone else? Yeah, I play by memory. Yeah, I've learned 1,100 pieces, which is a lot of music. I practice 10 hours a day. I start on a Monday morning, and I can learn and memorize a piece in 4 days. When I was at Juilliard, my teacher, who was an absolute genius, gave me a system of how to learn a piece from scratch. We worked on it for months and months, and I've learned probably 900 pieces under this method. And I've learned altogether about 1,100 pieces. Yeah. It's all, yeah, by memory. Yeah. Yes, ma'am, and I'll be done. Have I written any music? So I get asked that also. And then this is the last question. So I was at Juilliard. I was getting my master's degree. And I had 3 credits that I could take anything I wanted. So I decided to take composing. It's called composition. And because my teacher at Juilliard always talks to me about how to get into the mind of the composer, how to get into mind of Beethoven. So I said, well, I'm going to get into the mind of the composer. I'm going to become a composer. And I had a world-famous teacher. He was the head of the composition department at Juilliard, and he knew me because he heard me play concerts for 4 years at Juilliard. I was an absolute disaster. I couldn't burp out a good note. I mean, I had 5 weeks of lessons with him, and it was painful. He was in pain. I was in pain. And finally, he saw me in the halls at Juilliard. He always wore a bow tie. And he came up to me. His finger was, he was just like this, and his finger was right here at my nose. And he said, he cornered me in the hallway. He said, Mr. Rotman, you will be great at playing the music of dead men. But as a living man, you will never write any music. Drop my course, or I'm going to give you an F. Now, this is Juilliard. He would have given me an F. He's not going to give me a C for good effort. He would have destroyed my grade point average, and he saved me probably about $400 because it was not the whole semester of classes. So I only play the music of dead men. And I have 2 friends of mine who are composers, and they send me their music, and they say, Sam, when are you going to play my music? I say, I have to wait till you're a dead man. So, let me introduce my wife. Come on up here very quickly. This is my wife. She doesn't always travel with me, but when I told her I'm coming to Hawaii, she said, I'll go. But, no, I've been here 4 times. She came 12 years ago when I was here, and the last 2 times she wasn't able to come. But this is my wife, Deborah. We've been married 48 years. And we have 3 children and 5 grandchildren. And so if you want to talk to her and see what it's like to hear someone practicing 10 hours a day, she wears earplugs. And but I have 4 recordings in the back. I have all Beethoven recording. I have a French recording, which is Debussy, Clair de Lune. You listen to the French recording, and all the stress goes out of you. You'll become a puddle of water. There's a recording of Russian music. All the stress goes into you. It's Rachmaninoff, very powerful. And then there's a recording of 6 composers, Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, Chopin, Debussy, Rachmaninoff. And then there's a DVD of my whole testimony. It's a documentary produced by Jews for Jesus. And again, it's a DVD. You watch it on television. It's a documentary. They're each $15. There's no tax. The autograph is free. And years ago, I gave a concert in Arizona. I said, tonight, the autograph is $15 and the CD is free. And a man said, I'd like a CD with no autograph. So thank you. I want to just say, no, don't clap yet. I want to really thank Pastor Jay and his wife, Deb. I was here the first time 12 years ago. They were tremendous in having me here. I've been here 2 other occasions, and now he's transitioning from the church. They're a special couple. I want to take a picture with you guys to remember this, and their new pastor here. So thank you. I hope it was a blessing, and thanks to Jesus Christ who made it all possible, and I'll be in the back. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you so much, Sam. Sam was kind enough to not charge an admission fee tonight, so we will actually have a love offering up there. If you're going to make checks, 6 very crucial words, make checks out to Sam Rotman. Yeah, so not to anybody else. If you're going to write a check, make it out to Sam Rotman. That's Rotman. Isn't that right? Rotman. Once again, can we please just appreciate? I really enjoyed that. I'm sure you did too. Can we just give him a round of applause of appreciation? All right, so be sure to please visit the merch table up there. And if you feel so led, please contribute to the love offering. You are dismissed. Thank you and have a great night.